Just give me 1 second to collect myself. Hey, you guys, this is the Mean Magazine podcast, and I'm your host, Kristen Filipkowski. The Mean Podcast is where I talk to creative, curious, and ambitious women of all ages who are brave enough to be honest on social media and beyond. They're not afraid to show their flaws, and they're finding success and joy while they're at it. Hey, everyone. Welcome to episode number 10 of the Mean Magazine podcast. This week, I chat with Deborah Sedone, founder of The Cass Clutch, a super chic 70s-inspired line of luxury handbags. Deborah is also an interior designer and recently faced the difficult decision to choose one over the other. So she forced the issue by moving herself and her three kids from San Francisco's Bay Area to Lake Tahoe, which turns out, all things considered, to be a pretty good location to shelter in place. Keep listening to hear how vintage cars influenced Deborah's design sensibilities, how 9/11 contributed to shuttering her previous retail shop, and her shock over turning 50. I hope you enjoy the show. Hi, Deborah.
Hello.
Thank you so much for taking the time to be on my podcast.
Thank you for thinking of me.
Yeah, of course. And so today we have on the podcast Deborah Sedone.
Very well said.
Yeah, thank you. We practiced it a couple times before we started. I was saying it very wrong. But I'm so excited to chat with you today. And full disclosure, this is my very first remote podcast. So fingers crossed, everything is going to work out. The levels look good. It sounds good. So I have high hopes.
Nice. Then let's hope it doesn't have to always be like this either.
I know. So we are recording in the midst of the coronavirus quarantine. So Deborah, you are in Tahoe?
I am in Tahoe City, yes.
Tahoe City, which, you know, if you have to quarantine, that's not a bad place.
It's quite beautiful. Yes.
Yeah.
And quiet. It seems very quiet.
Yeah. And so, yeah, hence we could not be in person. But nevertheless, I'm very excited to chat with you. Deborah and I met because Deborah designs this amazing handbag called Cass. Is it Cass Clutch? Or
Cass Clutch.
Clutch. Yeah. And it's this very cool 70s inspired clutch, and now I believe you have versions with a strap, and I sort of modeled for you once on my blog.
You sure did.
That was so fun, and I was so excited that meant I got to have my own Cass clutch. It's gorgeous. It's a green suede bag, and I absolutely love it. So, Deborah, let's just get a little bit of your background. And first of all, I believe you're from Jersey. Let's go like all the way back and like
way
start
back
at the beginning. Yeah. And where you're from, how you got interested in design when you were younger, and we'll take it from there.
You got it. I'm a Jersey girl. Grew up in Jersey and love California. And I kind of imagine myself as being a Jersey girl, but with a Cali state of mind, thanks to my husband who brought me out here right after we got married. So I lived in New Jersey, very close to New York, grew up going to New York, both with family and then also just socially when I probably wasn't supposed to be. I know, right?
I love that.
Jersey is just so beautiful. I feel like oftentimes it gets a bad rap.
That is so true.
Yes, it's a beautiful place, right? Because you're from Pennsylvania and they're very close to each other.
Yes. And you know, Pennsylvania is beautiful too. I couldn't wait to get away from Pennsylvania, but it took going away to realize it's a very beautiful place. And it's very similar to Jersey as far as like, it's very green. Well, in the summer anyway, it's really beautiful, like lots of trees and it's lovely, but sometimes you don't realize until you go away.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But I'm very happy here. I'll take a California winter over any Jersey winter.
Yes. Yes.
For sure. Yeah, so New Jersey, and then I think, you know, you had mentioned design and my, you know, my interest in design, and I think it's something that's has cultivated over time, and it probably started when with my father, who was an auto body mechanic. Oh, and I'm only kind of realizing this now, honestly. Like, I'm about to turn 50, and I'm realizing some things that, have been before me for a long time. But so he was an auto body mechanic, and my sisters and I spent a lot of time in his shop. And he restored cars. He either restored them to their original condition, or he completely redesigned them. He would take cars from the 50s and chop them and custom paint them. He'd take like Camaros and just make them super beautiful and work on the interior. And, you know, this whole time, especially when I think about how I started Cass, I realized that seeing that stuff as a child, you know, something kind of old made new again, or things redesigned, really came a lot from my dad. So, which is really, really cool.
That is so cool. I personally love old cars. When I first, when I first moved to San Francisco, I had a 68 Mustang. And so that must have been like the cars are not designed like that anymore. They just, I feel like every car you look at on the road looks the same almost.
Yeah.
But back then, that must have been really cool to witness. Although, like, because the design of the cars, they were all so unique and had really cool aesthetics.
Yes. And, you know, it's just something that you, like you said, you don't see. And it's been, you know, now it's like, I still love cars, and mm-hmm. the whole family, we all have a passion for old cars. And we're like, you know, look at that Camaro. So yeah, growing up, my sisters had Camaros and Firebirds and Mustangs and, you know, it was, and Corvettes. So, cars were a big deal and still are in the family. Although we don't have a fancy old one now, or, you know, we're, yeah.
I know. I'm always tempted. Like, I would love to have a Mustang again, but it's like the maintenance and the gas, it's really hard to, it's not super practical.
Yeah. And the room to keep it if you're not going to be driving it every day. And,
right.
You probably shouldn't be anyway, but,
right.
Yeah. And the safety factor also
exactly.
is a big deal. As far as interiors, I remember as a kid having a dollhouse, which I still have, and that like just, I mean, hours and hours with my dollhouse.
Oh, wow. I bet you had the best looking dollhouse on the block.
It was pretty cool. My dad built it, but then, and I still have it. And not too long ago, I redecorated it so it would look like our first house that we had in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was super fun. I took the wallpaper that we had and I reduced it so it would be to scale to the dollhouse.
Oh
and
my God. Yeah, that sounds amazing.
Reupholstered furniture. Yeah, it was.
Oh my God.
It was really neat. So we have since moved, so it's really fun to look back at it. And like the kids will see that the stripes that were once painted in their room, they're still in the dollhouse.
Oh my gosh.
So
that is really cool. That must have been, I would imagine that would be like a very meditative thing to do.
It is. Yeah. You know, it's like, I think for me, I tried to knit and learn to crochet as a kid. I could never do it. I was like too still, but I could sit at that dollhouse for hours.
Wow. That is so interesting. Yeah. So you lived in Cambridge. Did you go to school there?
No, I did not. So I went to school. I went to school all over. I went to school in New Jersey, in Florida, California, North Carolina. I started off doing criminal justice, and that was definitely not,
for me.
School was really not for me.
Wow. Honestly. Like law?
Yes.
Wow.
And that lasted a year. But then I took some time off and I started working at a garden center and fell in love with plants, and I ended up getting a degree in horticulture.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And actually my husband and I met at the garden center.
Oh, nice.
Many moons ago. Yeah.
Okay. And then did that sort of dovetail into your interest in interior design?
I just think it was just another aspect, because botanicals are such a big have always been a big thing for me, especially when I do interiors. That's like the first thing I want to ask about or figure out where to place
or replace or repot.
Right.
I need so much help with that. I wish you could come over and help me with it.
I will one day. We'll look at that beautiful view and play with your plants.
Amazing. Oh, I would love that so much because I love plants too, but I'm not so great with them. So I could definitely use some help.
Yeah. You know what? I think people pay too much attention to them in a way. I mean, I think there's more overwatering than underwatering, and also just finding the ones that are right for your space.
Yeah.
In the light, but.
Yeah. So tell me about Cocoon Home. That was /is your design company. You do interior design. You're currently kind of segueing into, it sounds like, concentrating on Cass Clutch. But I'd love to hear how Cocoon Home got started, because your design, your room design and home design, just based on the website, are so gorgeous. And I've seen pictures of your own home that are just so stunning. You seem to be very talented at that. Aww, so I'd love to hear about, you know, how that got started, and then like what your thinking is now as far as that arm of your business is concerned.
Yeah. So Cocoon actually started as a furniture, accessories, and botanical store in Boston. So my mother-in-law also is a huge influencer on me as far as design, and early on, she gave me my first house beautiful, like probably 1990, like ages ago. I probably still have it because I love magazines, and it's the one thing I kind of hoard.
Me too, actually. I have a lot of dominoes.
Oh, yeah. Anthologies, yeah. My husband and I, right after we got married, we moved to California, and he did graduate school here. And during that time, I worked at Filamento, which was, I think, the very first lifestyle store ever that was on Fillmore in Sacramento. This store was amazing. So it had furniture, accessories. It was known for its window displays. I learned how to merchandise there. So that experience, I think, really kind of keyed my mother-in-law into thinking that I would be a good fit to help her open up a store. And we did. We opened up a store when we moved back to Boston, and she called it Cocoon.
And, cool.
So it was a retail store, and we did, there was, like I said, accessories, furniture, and botanicals.
Okay. And did you say that was here or back in?
In Boston.
In Boston. Sorry. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm on my second stint in California. First stint was when my husband and I first got married. And then we were here for about close to 7 years. And then we went back east. And I took that kind of experience, that working at Filamento, and helped my mother-in-law open up her dream store, basically. And it was great. We had a really good time doing it. And I learned a lot by also going to a lot of furniture stores. And we started doing services. People came in, they liked the aesthetic of the store. And that's how we started the interior design service of it, which still exists to an extent.
Yeah. Okay. And then when you moved back to San Francisco, you kept the name and used it as your own interior design business?
Yeah. And that took a little while to get started. But so we ended up closing the store, and we kept the design aspect running. And so during that time, I had my twin boys, and then I had my daughter. I had like 3 under 2 very, very quickly. But I worked the whole time. And what was great is that having the design business allowed me to work from home, be present with the kids, but get the heck out and be creative and have my own thing.
Oh, that's great. I'm curious how or why you decided to close the store. It just seems like a very interesting thing to talk about right now, because I have so many friends who are struggling right now because their stores can't be open. And a lot of them are looking at even having to close their businesses. And I think some already have. It's really sad and tragic. And I'm just curious what your experience was like having a storefront retail shop. It seems like it could be a really great experience, but also a little bit of a stressful one.
That for sure. So what's interesting is that not until you just asked why it closed, that the timing of what's happening right now is so interesting, because we opened up Cocoon, maybe 8 months before 9/11 hit.
Oh my gosh.
A very tragic and life-changing and world-changing event, right? So I'm like shaking just thinking about it. So we got this amazing space that was right next to these two towers, residential towers. They were just built. They were the Ritz-Carlton, super tall, like brand new buildings in Boston that were, the thought was that they were going to be filled up, right? And so we opened up pretty much right below them. 9/11 hits. No one wants to live in a sky-rise building.
Whoa.
The economy is just tanked. People are scared, just like now, right? And this is the time. I mean, people who have businesses now, I mean, they're super lucky. Like, I know it's difficult, but I mean, I'm completely dating myself now, but there was no Instagram, no Facebook, you know, barely email. I mean, we had to pay for magazine advertising, right? Like, it was...
Wow.
We didn't even have an online shop.
Wow. Right.
And so,
so different.
You know, it was super different. And, we changed, we had a lot of furniture pieces in the beginning, and we shifted to more accessories, more smaller items, continued with the botanicals. It seemed like that was like, even if people didn't have money or were afraid to spend money, they would come into the shop and, you know, buy, you know, a beautiful monstera leaf and, or have us put an arrangement together. And so we adjusted ourselves anticipating or hoping to anticipate what people could afford or feel comfortable to buy, but the overhead never changed. You know, right. our clients, their buying changed, but, you know, we still had a huge overhead. And it just was getting really difficult for us to stay afloat. And before it like took us all down, and actually did. I mean, I at a young age had to file for bankruptcy.
Oh wow!
Yeah, I mean, my husband was a graduate student. We had no money.
Yeah,
no money.
That.
So I have to tell you right now, I'm grateful that my husband is not a creative. I mean, he's creative in many other ways, but he, and you and I had this brief conversation. He is working right now. If he was in this handbag company with me, I would be really scared.
Yeah, I've had the same feeling that I'm glad. I mean, my husband and I met, we were both journalists, and I guess if we were both still journalists, we would probably be okay, because there's plenty to write about right now.
Yeah.
But it is, I guess it's good to diversify in your marriage.
Yeah. That's a good way of putting it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
A different type of portfolio. Right?
Yes. Yeah. That's so crazy. The parallels though, because I have heard other people compare this coronavirus experience to 9/11. As far as like the impact on the economy, honestly, I feel like this is worse in a lot of ways though. I mean, businesses didn't have to completely shut down, right? And
yeah, and you can go to your pub and grab a beer and talk about how scared and how crazy
exactly.
And how effed up everything is. It's very different. They're both really serious but wow.
Yeah.
Right now, it's, I don't know.
At least we have Zoom to,
thank goodness,
to communicate on.
Yes. And at least we have like, you know, gaming headsets from our kids to use during podcasts, because
yes.
I don't know what I would have done.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
Yeah.
Deborah told me earlier that she's wearing a pink puff leaf sweater and camo headset. Is that
camo headset?
And
yes.
You really have to take a selfie.
I will.
Before this is all over.
I definitely will.
That sounds like a really rad outfit.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, I woke up this morning. I did see an ad from Ulla Johnson or whatever, you know, and I was like, oh, I'm going to wear my one and only Ulla Johnson puffy sleeve sweater.
So, oh my gosh. I love the way she does her Instagram photos with like just kind of the torso.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Like the angle, however she does that, it makes it look so cool.
I know. And it's perfect. Cause like, I never want to see my face. Right. And so, but you want to show off something. And,
same yeah, here. It's yeah. It's a perfect way to do it.
Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah. So what made you want to moved a little bit away from Cocoon and in more into Cass? Or maybe you could also talk about like how you started Cass.
Yeah. So Cass, I guess I'm in my fourth year now. So never in my life did I imagine that I would have a product. Never before was I wasn't like a purse person. I mean, if anything, I was more of like a tomboy and I don't know, I just had my wallet and I could just never could really find the right bag, I guess. And then I picked up this bag, gosh, I don't know, now it's probably like 7 years ago from a consignment shop in San Francisco. And I just used it all the time because it felt so perfect for me. Like I finally found the piece that could hold client folders, a bag of Goldfish and my makeup, you know, like the Goldfish were not for me.
Right. But, clearly your children were small at the time.
Clearly, yes. Wherever I would go, young, old, male, female, people would be like, I love your bag. I love your bag. And the thing is like the leather is so thin, handles falling apart. Maybe that was the peel, you know, more so than a new one. But anyway, one day I just said, I'm going to make this bag. And I looked into it. I looked into the company, which was actually a shoe company. You could barely like make out the label on the bag. They were a shoe company in the 70s. They no longer exist. Didn't look like they did too many handbags. There's no patent on handbags. I don't know if most people probably know that. I mean, I had no idea, but that's why there's so many knockoffs. Yeah, you cannot patent handbags.
Interesting.
You can trademark. Okay. So I'm in the process of trademarking, but you know, just like I pretty much took someone's concept, right? And you know, people do this all the time. But you can trademark the thing. So that's how you kind of protect yourself in that kind of realm of not being able to patent it. But so I made the bag. I figured out I was going to make it a little bit bigger and add a pocket, but I had no idea what the heck to do or where to even begin. And I actually hired a purse consultant.
Oh my God.
Yes.
I can't believe that exists.
Yes. And she was great. So she was actually a friend, a daughter of a friend of ours who went to fashion school and worked in Florence at a handbag company and makes her own bag. She has a great blog called Bike Pretty. She's in the Mission.
Oh, I know that one. I remember
you know,
that
Bike
one.
Pretty, yeah.
How cool. Bike Pretty.
Yeah. So she taught me a lot. I mean, she also is a pattern maker. She made the first prototypes and walked me through how to buy leather, took me to different hide houses, kind of showed me the ropes, introduced me to people. And then from there, I launched it on Kickstarter. I had to find a manufacturer, which was like super crazy and hard. I hired two different purse consultants. First, Melissa from Bike Pretty, and then a gentleman in Berkeley who had a leather shop. And that was an interesting experience, a whole other story. But yeah, he was really hard on me.
Oh,
and
wow.
I thought that maybe I stuck it out for a while because I thought like I can learn something from him. But it was a very strange relationship. And
oh, wow.
It wasn't till like the very end that he said he wasn't going to produce the bags. And basically because I said, you know, Are you going to stick through this with me? Because I need to know. And it was a weird, yeah.
And then in the end, he said no.
Yeah. In the end, he said no. Yeah. And so then I was like, I remember like getting in the car and crying because I'd worked like so hard to get to just this one part. Right. And all I really needed outside of money, because I knew I was going to do a Kickstarter. My husband and I decided that that was the best thing to do. Let's like test the market, basically pre-sell the bags. And I did. It was successful. But I really needed someone to make the damn things when it was time to make them.
Oh my God. And he just kind of abandoned you at the end.
Yeah. I mean, I did find out later on that that the shop closed and I guess there was some health stuff, but I just, it was weird. I mean, you never know what's going on in people's lives, right? So you just have to be sensitive. And you also have to not be afraid to really say what's on your mind or to ask questions. Like I just felt like, or to realize that there's more than one way of doing something or more than one person that can help you with something, you know? And
right.
I was like banking just on him. And when that fell through, I was really devastated, but found the perfect person to help me. So it all worked out. Yeah.
Sounds like quite a learning experience though.
Yes. Yeah. And so I never thought that I was going to have a product, let alone it be a purse. And I never thought I was going to love it as much as I do. And I do. And I realized that that's what I want to do. I mean, now that I've made this decision in the climate that we're in now, I mean, luxury handbags, I mean, it's not quite the thing people are running out to buy.
I know. I still want one though, another one.
I'm sure we can work that out. So
Cass, I believe the name Cass comes from a family name. Is that correct?
Yes. So my maiden last name is Castellano.
Okay.
And my dad, who passed away a little over a year ago, went by Cass, and I did too for a long time.
Oh, wow.
And I always kind of regretted not keeping that nickname and a little bit not keeping my last name.
Uh-huh.
So, the funny thing is so I was working toward developing this handbag, and I was still kind of like on the fence about whether or not I should do it. And then I remember walking out of the house and saying, I'm going to call it the Cass Clutch. And then I knew then, like, that was it. It meant like, because the name is so personal. And I think it goes back to like earlier on when I was talking, you know, about my dad and him restoring things and making them new again. I mean, basically that's what I've done with a handbag. And right. So it's super connected to me.
Yes.
And it means
that's
a lot.
So cool. That is really cool. And it's a way for that name to live on.
Exactly. Yeah. So he had three daughters. So, you know, a big Italian guy has three daughters. So this is kind of, it's kind of nice. I like it.
Nice. So is it that you loved the idea of the handbag business so much that it's not allowing you to continue with Cocoon, or how is that transition happening?
I really want Cass to be successful. I want to be able to hire people and, you know, design more products, figure out how to be, you know, even more sustainable within the industry. But I just realized that I think all day about Cass, and at some point the interiors was just, I was doing it to help fund Cass for a while. And, you know, there's some point where you think, you know, okay, so I have like two businesses and kids. And like, sometimes I feel like not one thing is getting enough of attention, or there's too many, I needed to cut back on something, you know, I can't cut back on my kids.
Yeah.
And I just wasn't getting as much joy out of the interiors. And I know, and my last few projects were good, but I knew I needed to do Cass. And in order for me to do that fully, I really needed to back out from doing design. And then I kind of, you know, I'm in Tahoe, like you said earlier, and part of me felt like I needed to, we all needed a change, the kids and I and the routine. But
I'm curious to hear more about that too, because that's a big change to move from, you were in what part of the Bay Area? You were
in Lafayette.
Lafayette, which is
The East Bay.
The East Bay. Yeah. It's near like Walnut Creek and Miranda out there. Yeah.
Miranda and Berkeley.
Yeah. I lived in Moraga for 3 years.
Oh yeah. Right
so
there.
Kind of close. Yeah. But you know, much closer to the city, much more sort of metropolitan suburb kind of feel to moving to Tahoe. That's very different. So what was your thought process in making that move?
So we've been coming up for, I guess, about 2 years now. We have a small cabin and, you know, we all love it. And I guess there was this one day when we were getting ready to leave and I just felt like, oh my God, we're always leaving. Be nice to stay. And then like, I just, like, my mind just went like, how can we do this? And so my boys, they're 14, they're in eighth grade. And so this year they're in eighth grade, right? So I just figured like, if we did this year, it would be the year before they go to high school. I think at some point I just felt like we were all getting into a routine, especially me with the kids, like after school, the homework. And I was also just trying to get both businesses. I was trying to get one business off the ground and keep the other one super fluid so that it could help me get further and just in anything. And I was running around crazy, just also trying to network. And I just knew that I needed to step back.
Mm-hmm.
So that I could even focus on my kids a little bit more, honestly. And this opportunity presented itself because, lucky enough, we do have a place here. And we did it. The kids, you know, took a little convincing. My husband is still, well, right now he's actually in Tahoe because of the situation. And he's working here now. But has been commuting back and forth, which has been hard. And parenting, it's difficult on your own. I admire single parents. I mean, they're great kids, but even just homework, like,
ugh, oh God,
trying to do that on your own. You know, we all know that now, right?
I know. I mean, I cannot keep up with this with one child in school. I cannot imagine having three.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And our internet went out too. So there's like,
Oh, God. Oh, my God. Yeah. At least I would imagine the 14-year-olds can be a little bit self-guided.
Yes, they all are actually. And okay. And the instruction they're getting is great, but but you know, they've loved it up here and it has slowed us down. Also, my design work would come through referrals, gratefully, and I would always be like, this is my last project. But then I would get an inquiry and I would meet the person and see the house and get like super excited. And I almost feel like I kind of needed to remove myself, because now it's like I've gotten some inquiries. I'm like, I'm sorry, I live in Tahoe. I can't help you.
Right.
I don't know. Just, I think we all needed to be challenged in a different way to get out of our comfort zone. And never did I imagine this would happen. Now everyone is slowing down and everyone is in a space that isn't so familiar to them anymore.
Yeah. Right? It feels like a holding pattern or something like that.
Yeah.
So being in Tahoe, are you finding that you're able to focus more on CAS, or is it just kind of right now too crazy to focus on anything other than like trying to homeschool and all that?
Yeah. I mean, before this all happened, I definitely was able to focus more on CAS. I mean, I just felt like I needed room to think in a way. Mm-hmm. And I opened up. I have a studio here, whereas in the East Bay, my office was in the house. My office has been in my house for 13 years. So this was the first time I've had my own space away from the household, which did allow me, I think, to be more productive and more thoughtful regarding the business. So I've taken steps to separate the businesses so that now, because I was operating CAS under Cocoon and now they're two different entities, I'm trademarking, like I'm doing stuff like back end stuff.
Yeah.
I needed time and I needed a space to do that.
Yeah.
So it has helped me.
Are you glad that you're in Tahoe now that the shelter in place is happening? Like, are you glad rather than being back in Lafayette?
Great question. So I am glad. I mean, I'm sitting here right now in my studio looking at the lake and the snow-covered mountains. I mean, it's beautiful and there are less people, but like my husband did just go down to the East Bay to check on his mom and to bring her groceries. It's just weird to really be anywhere right now, I guess.
It is.
But yeah.
It feels very weird outside to me. I feel like there are a lot of cars on the road. Like, I think maybe people are just trying to like get out of their houses. So it seems like there are a lot of, but it's not like in the regular pattern where it's like busy at a certain time of day. Mm-hmm. It feels like scattered, like people are driving at weird times of day. And like, there's kind of a lot of people in the supermarket. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, it's a very strange feeling, which is inevitable. I mean, how could it not feel strange?
Yeah. I mean, just recently have we felt like the kind of shift in the supermarket here, right?
Oh, yeah.
Whereas I've been hearing that for a long time elsewhere, you know, now there's I went there at 7 o'clock this morning and I wasn't able to go in because it's the senior shopping time. I was like, I'm so sorry. So, but that just happened like this week, you know, where it seems like, so it's trickling.
Yeah. Yeah. So you are turning 50 soon, you mentioned.
Yeah.
And so when's your birthday?
Deep breath. April 8th.
Oh, wow. So very soon. Oh my gosh.
Very soon. Yeah.
So, well, it's kind of anticlimactic, I guess, to turn 50 under quarantine, unless you were actually wanting to keep it really low key, in which case that's great.
And I was. That was my plan.
Okay. I mean, yeah. So no big party has been canceled or anything like that?
No. Okay. But what I did want, I wanted my family from the East Coast to be here. And
aww.
So, yeah. And so we, a few months ago, got everyone tickets to come here. You know, my sister,
man.
And my mom. But unfortunately, yeah. So that's a bummer. But, you know.
You're going to have a Zoom party.
We will have a Zoom party. And they'll come out when it's a better time and, you know, it'll be fine.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So how are you feeling about turning 50 in general? Do you feel like you're 50 or how does it feel?
Sorry.
I know. I know.
I don't, there's times, I guess I do feel 50, I guess, but you know, not in a bad way, I guess like more, I'm a little shocked.
Yeah.
I'm just shocked. And I wish I could, I feel great. And like, I don't know. I'm a little sad about it, but I'm also so grateful because I love my life. I'm so fortunate. It just seems weird to me because I remember being younger and thinking that 50 was old, right? But it's not.
I know. It's not. I remember very vividly I'm not sure if it was my mom's or my dad's. I think it was my dad's 50th birthday party because he is younger than my mom. But I just remember it was like all this over the hill decorations and like, you know, over the hill mugs for that he got for gifts and stuff. And I was like, oh my God, 50 is so old. I was a teenager, you know. And it doesn't feel that way now, you know, it just feels like I'm a different version of who I was when I was in my like 30s, you know, in most ways, I feel like a better version in most ways, because I've learned so much, I've gone through so much and hopefully smarter and making better decisions and all that. But yeah, also, you know, I wear a much larger size of jeans than I did when I was in my 30s. So I don't know. It's all, you know, it's different.
It is different. It's different in a time, like you said, like the same, but
yeah. But different.
The same but different. And I wish I had some like magical thing to say about it, but and sometimes, you know, and I listen to other, you know, people talk about turning 50, but yeah, I am grateful because of the life I have now, of the life I had growing up, you know, and yeah. It is a time to reflect, you know, turning 50 and being in quarantine is like double whammy time to reflect.
Totally. Yeah. And I think that's actually really interesting what you said. It's not this like crazy magical thing like, oh my God, now I'm 50 and something huge is changing or there's a huge shift. It's like you're the same person you were yesterday. It's not, you know, it's not necessarily this enormous shift in your life.
No, but I think, when I turned 40 though, I felt like 40 was like a bigger one for me. For
really?
Yeah. I don't know. I just felt like, okay, I have 10 years, like, and now I'm like, oh my God, where did those 10 years go? Like, I put this, like, I got to do so much in 10 years. And I don't even know exactly what that so much was. It definitely, you know, no idea that it would be a handbag company, right?
Right.
Living in Tahoe, right? But,
right. Because 50, just, yeah. it felt like you had to get like shit done by the time you were 50.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's funny because I feel that way now. Like for some reason didn't feel that way in 40. When I turned 40, I probably should have felt a little bit more like fire under my ass or something. But I felt very young when I was 40. I felt like I had just gotten a Pilates instructor certification. So, and I was, you know, shifting away from tech journalism. So I just was like, yeah, you know, everything's cool. But now at 50, now I feel like the next 10 years has to really matter. I'm like at the place where you were when you were 40. Yeah.
Well, I love what you're doing. I think it's great.
You.
Yeah.
So
and
much.
I remember we talked about this when we first met.
Did we? And right. Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned, you're like, I have this idea. And I was like, oh, that sounds great. You know? And
yeah,
I mean, that was, you know, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago. So.
Yeah. And I'm finally, finally doing it.
Well, but that stuff takes a long, you know, things have to resonate for a while. I mean, even with Cass, I mean, it took me 3 years from like that moment when I walked out the door and said, I'm going to call it Cass Clutch to it actually being launched.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. It took me, you know,
it's
just life.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have kids, you have family, you have other things, you have yourself, you know, self-care.
Yeah.
And everything. Taking time is not a bad thing. Honestly.
Yeah. No, you're right. We talked a lot about the good stuff about getting older. I don't know. What is the best thing to you about getting older?
Well, I think there is an ease. that you gain. I definitely care about how I look and how I feel, but it's for me and my family now. It's not necessarily for some like outside forces. There is, I guess, the ability to have learned or to be able to look back on things that you, I mean, I don't want to sound like hokey, but you know, there's a little bit of a wisdom thing going on now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not that my 14-year-old boys would ever listen to me, but
I'm sure they think that you're, you know, cooler than they let on and smarter and, you know, wiser.
But I feel like they've gotten to a point where like they make fun of me in a way where it shows that I'm getting older.
Oh my gosh. I feel that so much. No, my 19-year-old does the same thing. And I'm like, wait, I thought I was cool. But you're totally making fun of this thing I just did or whatever. Like, well, I've had to do my dance class. I go to this dance class called Rhythm and Motion. And obviously I haven't been able to go, but they've put classes online, which is something they never did before because getting together was a big part of the experience. So they never had online classes. But because of this, they're putting some online. So I'm doing it like in the downstairs, like the family room, and he's sitting there playing a video game. And I'm like, dude, you can either, you know, you can be embarrassed and I'm going to be dancing, or you can go in the other room. Like, you can go play your video game in your bedroom. And he's like, I don't care. I'm just going to play my video game. And then, but then he's looking at me and he's like, oh my God, you do not have moves. I'm like, well, come on, like, leave me alone.
Yes. So, like, I've been doing this way too long to not have any moves.
I know. Oh. I'm like, I thought I had moves, and he's totally like embarrassed for me. But
yeah. I mean, even things like the way I pronounce certain things, like once in a while, I guess maybe a little of the Jersey comes out, but they'll make fun of me and I'm like, ooh, ouch.
That's funny. Yeah, I get that too. Yeah. And there are so many words that he says that I don't even know what, honestly, I don't know what he's talking about, like a lot of slang and stuff. And I have to have him translate. Definitely makes me feel a little bit old, but
then
I remind myself that there's an awful lot that I know that he doesn't. So it's
And those are the moments that are that make it good, you know, that make you just have to grasp onto them.
Yes. So the teaching moments.
Yeah.
Well, Deborah, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it was so fun. Yeah. I want to talk to you more. We'll have to, when this is all over.
I know. We'll meet up. Yeah. Well, I mean, we can do a Zoom call anytime.
Well, thank you so much. I love what you're doing. Keep it up. And thank you.
Thank you so much. And same to you.
Okay.
Okay. Bye. Take care. Bye-bye. Thanks so much for listening to the Mean Podcast. Please check out the online magazine at www.meanmagazine.com and get in touch if you or someone you know should be featured in the magazine or on the podcast.